You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hey, it's Flames Talk on a Tuesday. It's February 13th. Steinberg along with you wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, and more. Thanks for being along with us on this Tuesday. And on Tuesdays, we say hello to our buddy Frank Saravalli. It's time to check in with our NHL insider. Brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, Amazon, and a whole lot more. Hello, Mr. Saravalli. Happy Tuesday, pal. How are you?
Pretty good. How you doing, Pat?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Hey, one of the before we dive into some of the topics around the league, I always like to engage you on a few Flames things that we've been talking about over the last week or so. And this one has not been just the last week or the last month. It's probably been the last, 15 years. But one of the big topics in this market going into the summer after the pretty successful season the Flames had and just how surprisingly successful it was has been, how do the Flames go about finding their number one center? How do the Flames go about finding that next guy that they can put down the middle? That's such a everlasting quest, it feels like, in this market. But it feels like that has jumped right to the top again of Craig Conroy's to-do list. How do they answer that conundrum in your eyes?
Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not being flippant when I say that. I mean, if you find the answer, you could let Craig Conroy and the Flames know. You can check in with the Flyers and probably the Montreal Canadiens. You can check in with, I don't know, any number of teams that are looking for the same exact thing, because it's so incredibly difficult to find. And it feels like the true answer to your question is just through the draft. And once teams get their hands on these players, they're really difficult to acquire. Teams don't want to let them go. And if not, they're costing you an arm and a leg. And so I just think it's the hardest thing to do in this sport is to find a top flight center that can anchor your team for the next, 15 years. I mean, just go through the division. Anze Kopitar, drafted and has been there his whole career.
Yep.
Connor McDavid, drafted, been there his whole career. Elias Pettersson, drafted, may not be there his whole career, but may not be any good. Leo Carlson, there's a reason why the Anaheim Ducks took him in that spot. The Kraken are still searching. The San Jose Sharks, drafted number one overall, Macklin Celebrini, he's their guy. Vegas, they're maybe the one exception on here.
But they're the exception to everything, right?
Yeah, they're the exception to a million things. But they traded for Jack Eichel, but they did so as damaged goods with a guy who needed a major unprecedented neck surgery and also had kind of hit the skids in Buffalo, hadn't played super well, was at odds with his team, and no one was really quite sure what he was going to look like on the other end of it. So unless you can find that piece out there, I just think it's the hardest thing to do in this sport.
Yeah, and honestly, where the Flames are drafting this year, you're probably not looking at that guy. And we all know that, there are certain drafts like that 03 draft, which ended up providing teams with number one centers into the second and third round, it felt like. And, there's the David Pastrnaks and the Ryan O'Reillys and those types of things. But generally, where the Flames are drafting this year, that's probably not going to be the spot where they find him. It continues to be a really difficult conundrum. And it goes back to, the conversation that we had last summer, right? And that is, hey, the Flames are not looking to completely tear this thing down. And they're trying to stay competitive while they get younger. And that's why I continue to be so fascinated as to how they're going to find that guy to fill the most important void.
Well, I think you need a couple things to happen. I think, one, you would need a draft like 2003, and I don't know that next year's 2026 draft is quite thought of in that manner, but I think it's expected to be special. I mean, sometimes you get lucky. You get a guy with – I'm thinking back to 2003 and the team I was covering – the Flyers had Jeff Carter at 11 and Mike Richards at 24. Like, I mean, those two guys, how often do they pop up in the late teens and 20s? Probably not that often. The other thing, too, is, you know, you have to look at even when you think you're drafting, like, let me add some context, too. Even when you think you're drafting your next number one center, I bet the Chicago Blackhawks right now are asking, what if Connor Bedard is a winger? That's a real thing. Like, just because you think a guy or projects a guy to be a center doesn't mean that he necessarily is one.
Yeah. The Bedard thing is fascinating after his second year in the league. You know, one of the names that has been pretty hotly speculated about in this market, and look, I don't know. A, this player is not going to solve their number one center void. It would help them down the middle, no doubt, but it's not going to solve the void. And B, this player may not get to unrestricted free agency when it's all said and done. But what are your what's your read on Sam Bennett and his future with the Florida Panthers? Like, is that a guy that does hit unrestricted free agency in your mind?
I really don't know the answer because there's lots of different rumor and innuendo that's been floating out there about Bennett behind the scenes. Just today, someone had mentioned to me, hey, I'm hearing that the Panthers and Bennett have a deal done, and it's going to wait until the finish line to be announced, sort of like how the Sam Reinhart deal was last year. And then 10 days ago, I heard, hey, heard that Sam Bennett and Team X have a deal done and it's in the drawer and this player is never making it to market, or if he is making it to market, it's wink, wink. He's going to this place at 12:01 Eastern. Yeah. So I don't know what's true, what's false. Obviously keep my ear to the ground, but it's hard to say. And beyond that, I think you're right. He's not a number one center, is not solving the number one center problem. And I think the one thing that teams are going to really have to manage, whoever signed Sam Bennett, is this was a career regular season year for him.
Yep.
I don't need to tell you, being in Calgary, that this is not a consistent, productive regular season player. Sam Bennett earns his money when there is no salary cap, and that's in the playoffs.
Yep.
And you need guys like him to be successful in the postseason, but you need other guys that can carry the mail during the regular season to get you to Sam Bennett time.
Yep. Yeah, I think if he gets there, if it's not just nudge, nudge, wink, wink, and he does actually make it to market, I think the Flames will put a significant offer on the table. But whether or not that ends up getting him back to Calgary, I don't know. And obviously, whether or not he makes it to market is maybe the biggest question when it's all said and done. So, you know, and the reason I ask all these questions is because, you know, we've had some really fun conversations over the last few weeks as we're full on into offseason mode on a show called Flames Talk. And we've talked a lot about the Flames and how maybe they've started to accumulate some core pieces. Like, we just saw Matt Coronato get signed to a 7-year contract extension. You and I have had a few conversations, Frank, about, you know, what a long-term contract extension might look like for Dustin Wolf. And then there's Zane Parekh, who's the guy that I wanted to ask you about in that, just from who you speak to around the league and from your knowledge and your observations, like, is this another one of those guys that in your mind is a centerpiece type player for the team?
I think he is. And I think, look, the talent is undeniable. The skill level has been super impressive. And To me, I think the biggest thing that stands out about Zane Parekh is he brings an element that the Calgary Flames organization doesn't have. He's something totally different. And I think for that reason alone, he's going to be a centerpiece and a piece that this team can build around. And so he certainly looks like at number nine that the Flames ended up with a really quality defenseman that's going to be there for a long time and playing a premium position at that right shot.
Yeah. Last one on the Flames, this comes right from your latest over at Daily Faceoff, and that would be your top 50 unrestricted free agents as we're about a month and a half away from the UFA period starting on July 1. Only Flame on there is Dan Vladar. He's sitting at number 40. Just remains status quo in terms of what you understand on Vladar and whether or not he ends up getting to UFA or not?
I think so, and I think the biggest thing that stands out to me with regards to Vladar is when you look at the AFP analytics numbers, which, by the way, for anyone that wants to poo-poo them, these are their final projections and the numbers that I posted, and they absolutely drilled, like, down to the penny, Neil Pionk's deal, 6 years times $7 million, and Alex Iafallo, 3 years at $3.7 million. They've been spot on. Honestly, you could make the joke, like, did the Winnipeg Jets front office even try, or did they hand over the AFP analytics numbers and that's how they got a deal done? And I say that totally in jest. But the biggest thing that stands out with Vladar is that his number is projected at 1 × 1.5. And I think that's a number that's really low. Because if that was the number and that was something that he'd be willing to entertain, I think he'd already have been extended.
Right.
So my read on that situation is that Vladar has been asking for significantly more. I think teams are tantalized by his size. And they also look at his age and say at 27, this is still a young goalie that has room to grow. Because by and large, teams, you know, goalies don't become starters if they're lucky until 24, 25, and we've seen many really begin to blossom at age 27. It's a different beast that I think he's due for significantly more than the 1.5 that they're projecting, and I think that reason is why he's unsigned right now.
He is Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. And as you go and take a look at some of the rest of those top 50 UFAs, Mitch Marner sitting at number one, Brock Besser, John Tavares, Matt Duchene, Aaron Ekblad rounding out the top five. On the Marner and Tavares fronts, I know everybody is talking about Matthew Nyes and what happens with him. And you know, I think it would be fair to say if you're Brad Treliving, Nyes might be your top priority with him being offer sheet eligible. But Marner and Tavares, what are the chances that we see one or both of those guys back in Toronto as you continue to handicap this situation?
I think the odds are pretty strong that one of them's back, and I would put money on Tavares, not Marner. I just think the Marner situation, look, some of this for sure is still dependent on results. I think the Leafs have made a bunch of different overtures to try and get him signed. And then when he was unwilling to engage, you know, then that's when the gloves came off at this deadline in asking him to waive the no trade to try and get their hands on Rantanen. So that, I think, added yet another layer of what's been a pretty difficult relationship, I would say. And that said, look, I think at the same time, Marner is probably, based on the way I'm reading the tea leaves, intrigued at what a different home might look like, what playing outside of the Toronto fishbowl might be like. And I think a lot of those things are converging on a summer where there's a massive cap increase and more coming, and it's kind of the perfect time to become a free agent at age 27 after a 100-point season. So I think a lot of signs are pointing toward him moving on. And then Tavares, I mean, he's definitely taking a significant discount, but the question is how much?
Yep. Okay. Let's move on.
I just want to add in Knives. I think he's going to be a fascinating case because when you think about his game on the low end, I think he's Tom Wilson. And I think on the high end, he's a really unique player that I don't want to say. I got into this with JD Bunkus the other day. He called him a unicorn, and I think that's a stretch too far. But with the physicality, the way that he plays, and the goal-scoring ability, the hunger that he has to make hits, I just think he's got an intimidation factor that so few players. He's in the category with both Tkachuk brothers. A special player, and then you look at his numbers and you compare him to Wyatt Johnson and the new contract that he got after back-to-back 30-goal seasons. I don't know that it can quite stretch that high, but it's going to be pretty expensive for Toronto.
And is there any doubt that guy, like, he feels like if that thing drags on, and if we're talking about a summertime where that remains kind of in a set too, it feels like Knies is almost guaranteed to have people tender offer sheets. Whether or not he signs one is up to him. Sounds like he wants to stay. But it feels like if there's ever been a year to be like, yeah, you know what? If I'm going to a betting site and there's some sort of offer sheet odds, there's just too much smoke around that if that doesn't get taken care of.
I would tend to agree. I would think here's the other thing about offer sheets, though. And it is interesting because we saw some of the offer sheet compensation out there today.
Yeah.
I just think teams like Calgary, teams like, I don't know, pick a team toward the bottom 10 in the standings. Yeah, especially ahead of a massive draft with a generational type player available in 2026, it really disincentivizes you from wanting to use your picks in an offer sheet.
Yep. Yeah, I was talking to somebody about that.
It's built for teams that are picking in the late 20s. Like, oh, yeah, we'll give up a first-round pick. You want four of them? Sure. I mean, and they can create the best poison pill possible, and they're like, who cares if we lose the picks? They're not really worth that much.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about that earlier, and they kind of suggested that, man, if you're one of those teams, and like if you're a San Jose, if you're a Chicago, if you're a Buffalo, somebody like that, and then all of a sudden you win the lottery next year, and you're saying goodbye to the number one overall pick, who is Gavin McKenna, who's putting up 3 points a game in the Western League playoffs. You're saying to yourself, oh, should we have done that? It's a really fair rebuttal to a lot of the offer sheet stuff that's out there.
I don't think you can do that. If you're in one of those positions where you are a potential thought to being in the lottery conversation, like I think for that exact reason why the New York Rangers have to unload that pick. Now, they're picking at 12. They have until 48 hours before the draft to decide whether or not to hand it over to Pittsburgh. And if not, 2026 becomes unprotected. Like, what happens if the wheels fall off with the Rangers in Mike Sullivan's first year? I'm not expecting that. They're not expecting it. But then your team goes out and wins the lottery, and you didn't want to give up number 12 because,
yeah.
Hey, all of a sudden, now what?
Yep.
I just think it's a different year to think about draft picks for 2026.
Couple more with Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. Joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. Okay, the news in the NHL here over the last 24 hours or so has been a new GM in Los Angeles, and that is former Red Wings and Oilers general manager Ken Holland brought in to LA. Tell us about how this all came to be and why the Kings have decided Ken Holland is their guy.
The great question on how it came to be, and probably an even better question on why the Kings decided that he's their guy. I think maybe they're watching the Oilers and the success that they're having perennially in the playoffs and think, hey, we're struggling to get over the hump of beating the Oilers 4 years in a row. Maybe we need to get the guy that their team that we keep losing to. That's part of it in terms of how he arrived there. I believe he turned down the New York Islanders and their president job that I believe was offered to him. I think part of that was just geography too far for him to get from New York to his home in BC. And, you know, LA obviously much closer and probably in a bit of a better position to turn things around in order to give them a chance to win. So I think the real surprise for me is that they had a ready-made replacement there, and Mark Bergevin, who's been in the organization for 3 years, a close friend of Luke Robitaille, and they end up passing him over and going outside of the organization and doing something different. Maybe that's what they needed. But nonetheless, very interesting. And Ken Holland's resume is clearly unquestioned. Mm-hmm. Name on the Stanley Cup 4 times, very close to having a fifth with a second different organization in Game 7 last year. So it's just an interesting time for a guy that spent the first year outside of a GM post in 27 years, now back in the game.
What can you tell us about a potential front office restructure in Buffalo?
It seems like there's not going to be a ton of overall changes. They have gone through the gamut in the last few weeks. They had, depending on how you want to frame this, conversations, interviews with multiple experienced front office personnel. And in the end, the belief is that Kevin Adams retains the general manager position, and that instead of hiring someone above him as president that he would report to, and potentially even explore the idea of a multi-layered approach in bringing in someone underneath of him, that for now, Kevin Adams is running the show, and they're continuing to talk to people about senior advisor roles. Now, I saw on social media today, former Islanders general manager Lou Lamoriello was spotted in the Buffalo airport. I don't know what that means, if anything. Could be one of those senior advisor targets, but knowing or having a real good sense of how Lou Lamoriello operates, my guess would be that he's a guy that wants complete and total control, as opposed to just being someone that gets to offer insight and opinion. And I think the larger, bigger question for the Sabres is, if you felt the need to go through this entire exercise after the fifth season with Kevin Adams at the helm and your playoff drought now reaching 14 years, when you hired a guy that didn't have any experience, why did you decide to wait until year 5 to try and add more experience around him? I would think at that point, there are no more rookies. Everyone's experienced 5 years in.
Yep. Last one for you. And I guess just a thought on close-ish to home, almost in the backyard. The Edmonton Oilers bounce back with a huge Game 4 win after what could, like, honestly, I think a lot of people, including myself, thought that, you know, that Game 3 loss, the way it ended, could be an absolutely devastating blow in that series and a massive swing point. They bounce back with a pretty comprehensive 3-0 Game 4 victory. I'm just curious your thoughts on this series with the Oilers heading back to Vegas with a chance to wrap it up.
It's an amazing swing. I would say that last night's Game 4 for the Oilers is as important as the next Game 5 is for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, both teams in somewhat similar positions, the Leafs finding out the hard way, allowing and opening the door for Florida to get back into the series. And now the Panthers seem like they're cooking. And the Oilers, for once, finally, it seems, made life a little bit easy on themselves. It was a roller coaster first round against the Kings. Last year, they put themselves in almost every difficult position they could be in during the course of a playoffs, including down 3-0 in the Cup Final and making it back to level ground. This was, it seemed to be a glimpse of maturity and a team that their coach pressed all the right buttons. Their goaltender finally got a shutout. Leon Draisaitl turned in a Selke-like performance with 2 fourth-line wingers on his flank, shutting down Jack Eichel. There was just about every facet, including a physical edge and an aggression that you would want to see from the Oilers in Game 4 to now put a stranglehold on the series and a team that also has cup pedigree.
Yep. Get out of here, my friend. Enjoy the rest of the second round. We will catch up with you next Tuesday and chat again. But as always, thanks for the insight, Frank. Really appreciate it, pal.
Sounds good. Take care. See you, Pat.
You too, man. Frank Saravalli is our NHL insider from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. He joins us, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.